Gale offered to carry her. I think he wanted to see the look on Prim's face as much as I did. In a moment of complete giddiness, I bought a pink ribbon and tied it around her neck. Then we hurried back to my house. You should have seen Prim's reaction when we walked in with that goat. Remember, this is a girl who wept to save that awful old cat, Buttercup. She was so excited, she started crying and laughing all at once. My mother was less sure, seeing the injury, but the pair of them went to work on it, grinding up herbs and coaxing brews down the animal's throat.
"They sound like you," says PETA.
I had almost forgotten he was there. Oh, no, PETA. They work magic. That thing couldn't have died if it tried, I say. But then I bite my tongue. Realizing what that must sound like to PETA, who is dying, in my incompetent hands.
"Don't worry, I'm not trying," he jokes. "Finish the story."
Well, that's it. Only I remember that night, Prim insisted on sleeping with Lady on a blanket next to the fire. And just before they drifted off, the goat licked her cheek, like it was giving her a goodnight kiss or something, I say. It was already mad about her.
"Was it still wearing the pink ribbon?"
he asks. "I think so," I say. "Why?"
"I'm just trying to get a picture," he says thoughtfully. "I can see why that day made you happy."
"Well, I knew that goat would be a little goldmine," I say.
"Yes, of course, I was referring to that, not the lasting joy you gave the sister you love so much you took her place in the reaping," says PETA dryly.
"The goat has paid for itself several times over," I say in a superior tone.
"Well, it wouldn't dare do anything else after you saved its life," says PETA. "I intend to do the same thing."
"Really? What did you cost me again?" I ask.
"A lot of trouble. Don't worry, you'll get it all back," he says.
"You're not making sense," I say. I test his forehead. The fever's going nowhere but up. "You're a little cooler, though." The sound of trumpets startles me. I'm on my feet and at the mouth of the cave in a flash, not wanting to miss a syllable. It's my new best friend, Claudius Templesmith, and as I expected, he's inviting us to a feast. Well, we're not that hungry, and I actually wave his offer away in indifference when he says,
"Now, hold on. Some of you may already be declining my invitation. But this is no ordinary feast. Each of you needs something desperately."
I do need something desperately. Something to heal PETA's leg.
"Each of you will find that something in a backpack marked with your district number at the cornucopia at dawn. Think hard about refusing to show up. For some of you, this will be your last chance," says Claudius.
There's nothing else, just his words hanging in the air. I jump as PETA grips my shoulder from behind.
"No," he says, "you're not risking your life for me."
"Who said I was?" I say.
"So you're not going?"
he asks. "Of course I'm not going. Give me some credit. Do you think I'm running straight into some free-for-all against Cato and Clove and Thresh? Don't be stupid," I say, helping him back to bed. "I'll let them fight it out. We'll see who's in the sky tomorrow night and work out a plan from there."
"You're such a bad liar, Katniss. I don't know how you've survived this long."
He begins to mimic me.
"I knew that goat would be a little gold mine. You're a little cooler, though. Oh, of course I'm not going."
He shakes his head. "Never gamble at cards. You'll lose your last coin," he says. Anger flushes my face. "All right, I am going, and you can't stop me."
"I can follow you, at least partway. I may not make it to the cornucopia, but if I'm yelling your name, I bet someone can find me, and then I'll be dead for sure," he says.
"You won't get 100 yards from here on that leg," I say.
"Then I'll drag myself," says PETA. "You go, and I'm going too."
He's just stubborn enough, and maybe just strong enough to do it. Come howling after me in the woods. Even if a tribute doesn't find him, something else might. He can't defend himself. I'll probably have to wall him up in the cave just to go myself. And who knows what the exertion will do to him. What am I supposed to do? Sit here and watch you die, I say. He must know that's not an option, that the audience would hate me, and frankly, I would hate myself too if I didn't even try.
I won't die, I promise, if you promise not to go, he says.
We're at something of a stalemate. I know I can't argue him out of this one, so I don't try. I pretend, reluctantly, to go along. Then you have to do what I say. Drink your water, wake me when I tell you, and eat every bite of the soup, no matter how disgusting it is. I snap at him.
Agreed. Is it ready?
He asks. Wait here, I say. The air's gone cold, even though the sun's still up. I'm right about the game makers messing with the temperature. I wonder if the thing someone needs desperately is a good blanket. The soup is still nice and warm in its iron pot, and actually doesn't taste too bad. Peeta eats without complaint, even scraping out the pot to show his enthusiasm. He rambles on about how delicious it is, which should be encouraging if you don't know what fever does to people. He's like listening to Haymitch before the alcohol has soaked him into incoherence. I give him another dose of fever medicine before he goes off his head completely. As I go down to the stream to wash up, all I can think is that he's going to die if I don't get to that feast. I'll keep him going for a day or two, and then the infection will reach his heart or his brain or his lungs, and he'll be gone. And I'll be here all alone, again, waiting for the others. I'm so lost in thought that I almost miss the parachute, even though it floats right by me. Then I spring after it, yanking it from the water, tearing off the silver fabric to retrieve the vial. Haymitch has done it. He's gotten the medicine, I don't know how, persuaded some gaggle of romantic fools to sell their jewels, and I can save Peeta. It's such a tiny vial, though. It must be very strong to cure someone as ill as Peeta. A ripple of doubt runs through me. I uncork the vial and take a deep sniff. My spirits fall at the sickly sweet scent. Just to be sure, I place a drop on the tip of my tongue. There's no question. It's sleep syrup. It's a common medicine in District 12. Cheap, as medicine goes, but very addictive. Almost everyone's had a dose at one time or another. We have some in a bottle at home. My mother gives it to hysterical patients to knock them out, to stitch up a bad wound, or quiet their minds, or just to help someone in pain get through the night. It only takes a little. A vial this size could knock Peeta out for a full day. But what good is that? I'm so furious, I'm about to throw Haymitch's last offering into the stream when it hits me. A full day? That's more than I need. I mash up a handful of berries so the taste won't be as noticeable and add some mint leaves for good measure. Then I head back up to the cave. I brought you a treat. I found a new patch of berries a little farther downstream. Peeta opens his mouth for the first bite without hesitation. He swallows, then frowns slightly.
They're very sweet.
Yes, they're sugar berries. My mother makes jam from them. Haven't you ever had them before? I say, poking the next spoonful in his mouth.
No, he says, almost puzzled. But they taste familiar. Sugar berries?
Well, you can't get them in the market much. They only grow wild, I say. Another mouthful goes down. Just one more to go.
They're sweet as syrup,
he says, taking the last spoonful.
Syrup.
His eyes widen as he realizes the truth. I clamp my hand over his mouth and nose hard, forcing him to swallow instead of spit. He tries to make himself vomit the stuff up, but it's too late. He's already losing consciousness. Even as he fades away, I can see in his eyes what I've done is unforgivable. I sit back on my heels and look at him with a mixture of sadness and satisfaction. A stray berry stains his chin and I wipe it away. Who can't lie, Peeta? I say, even though he can't hear me. It doesn't matter. The rest of Pan Am can. Chapter 21. In the remaining hours before nightfall, I gather rocks and do my best to camouflage the opening of the cave. It's a slow and arduous process, but after a lot of sweating and shifting things around, I'm pretty pleased with my work.